In our last class, we talked about one of the most outstanding evidences of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. What is it? The empty tomb. The empty tomb is subjective or objective evidence? Objective. It's without you. It does not depend on how you feel about it. The fact is, the tomb is empty and has been for over 2,000 years. The fact is, the body still has not been produced, the dead body. The tomb is still empty. And so the question that resounds and that needs to be answered is, where's the body? Those of you who are here know where the body's at. It was raised from the dead. But unbelievers do not believe that. And so they have to do something, make some effort to account for this fact of the empty tomb. And so that's our study today. What kind of efforts are made to account for the empty tomb by those who want to discount the resurrection? We begin with Matthew chapter 28, which unbelievers came up with this story.
Well, the Jews did.
The Jews did, that's right. The rulers of the people. So they realized the need to provide some explanation. They knew the importance on Sunday morning of having the body in the tomb. And so they've got this story that you read in Matthew 28:11, which we'll look at here, that these soldiers, they told these soldiers to tell as to account for the empty tomb. So we ask you some questions. Now you're on the jury, and so these soldiers are come up and they're going to testify. And they tell the story that you have here in Matthew 28. Let's look in your Bible. So verse 11, they went in and told the chief priests all that had happened. So when they had assembled with the elders and counseled together, they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers and said, "You are to say, here's your story. Stick with it." And so their story is, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. That's their story. And so we ask you on the lesson, you're on the jury. And that's what the soldiers say. Every single one of them, you call to the witness stand, they say the same thing. We were asleep and the disciples stole the body away. All right? What problem do you find with that?
They weren't supposed to be asleep.
Number one, this is a select guard. You remember what Pilate said, chapter 27? You have a guard. What did he say? Make it as sure as you know how. You think that it got some old ragtag soldiers? These are the leaders of the Jews. You have a guard. Make it as sure as you know how. And these fellows fell asleep. But there's more than just a soldier falling asleep. What are they saying? Besides, a soldier fell asleep.
The body was stolen.
Huh? The body was stolen is what they're saying. Well, what about this sleep business?
How did they know?
That's a good question. My question is not a good question. Suppose two soldiers fell asleep. They're saying they all fell asleep. Think of this now. So you're on the jury and you call the soldier and say, "Well, we fell asleep." Okay, let's get George up here. George said, "Yeah, we fell asleep." Let's get Paul up here. "Oh, yeah, we fell asleep." All the guards fell asleep at the same time? Does that maybe raise a question? Okay, and then Wally brought up another thing. Say it again, Wally.
If they were
We fell asleep. They stole the body. Well, how do you know? If your testimony is true that you were asleep, how do you know that they stole the body? You went to sleep. The body was there. You're saying when you awoke, the body was gone. You don't know what happened to the body. It is interesting, isn't it? One of the efforts to account for the empty tomb we're going to look at is called the swoon theory. That Jesus really didn't die. He was weak, fainty, but he revived in the tomb, pushed the stone away, overcame the soldiers, and got out. Interesting, the soldiers didn't use that. I guess they and the leaders knew that didn't make much sense. But nevertheless, that wouldn't make any sense. Now, DeMarcus said they stole the body. They who stole the body? The disciples. What kind of men were they? What were some of them? What was their profession? Were they professional thieves?
Fishermen.
One was a fisherman. Well, several were fishermen. One was a tax collector. Right? Would they have much expertise in robbing tombs? But there's more about those guys. Were they brave men up to this point? A bunch of cowards. When Jesus was arrested, what did they all do? They fled. They ran away. So you're telling me, soldiers, that every one of you fell asleep, and these cowardly men, including a fisherman and a tax collector, came while you were asleep right there and stole the body, rolled the stone back, got the body out of the tomb without you knowing it. Would that raise some questions if you were on the jury and heard that kind of testimony?
They must have been all dead, too, because to roll that big stone away, it was an earthquake by an angel.
Enough men could have rolled the stone away.
Without making any noise?
Well, that's a good point. What about the noise? Maybe those soldiers were sound sleepers. Every one of them, huh? That's a good point. What about the noise of rolling that stone back? Did not wake the soldiers? All right, good point. And then, the guards wake up and the body's gone, supposedly. If that's what happened, what would you expect when they go into town and tell their superiors what happened? What would you think these superiors, if that's really what happened, what would have followed by these men who had civil authority?
They would be
reprimanded.
The soldiers, that's right. And that's a question. Now, why aren't the soldiers punished? Because this was a duty that their life was at stake. Of course, they're not going to tell about the money. But here's another question. If the disciples stole the body, you're in a position of authority. What are you going to do? Could you maybe go get those guys and interrogate them? Wouldn't that what those guys... What did they do with the blind man? Yeah, they got him and said, hey, come here, I want to... They asked the parents, they asked the blind man, not once, but twice, three times. They interrogated him. You notice there's no interrogation of any of the disciples? Doesn't that sound a little strange? If the rulers believe this story, why is there no interrogation? Why weren't the disciples sought out and arrested? Somebody said arrested a while ago. And then somebody said, why wasn't any punishment meted out to the soldiers? That's kind of strange, isn't it? And, so let's say the body was stolen. If the body was stolen and it was very important, you needed it. You're in the position of authority. You have soldiers at your command. What might you do to try to stop this heresy that's going to start? How could you stop it?
Turn everything upside down and find
that body. You bet. We're going to find that body. But there's no search for the body that we find anything about. Why? If you really believe a fisherman and a tax collector and some other guy stole the body, and you've got all the authority of the civil court at your command, the Roman soldiers, you're not going to go try to find the body? That sounds a little strange. So they said these disciples stole the body. What was the disciples' view toward the idea of Jesus being raised?
They didn't believe it.
They didn't even believe he was going to be raised. When he appeared to them, they didn't believe it. First time. So what would motivate them to go steal the body when they don't even believe he's going to be raised in the first place? Doesn't that sound a bit odd? And then Matthew wrote all of this stuff in the first century, maybe within 15 to 30 years of it happening. If it wasn't true, wouldn't there have been someone to come forward? Who did he write it to, of all people? The Jews. The people who would want to disprove it. But there's no indication of any effort to disprove what Matthew wrote except this one story. So I've got kind of a summary of it on your lesson. The Roman guards, and likely those known to be the best, fell asleep on duty. And while they were asleep, some discouraged fishermen, a tax collector, and some others who had proved cowards only a couple of days earlier, came and dared to break the Roman seal to fabricate a lie, rolled away the large stone, removed the linen wrappings from the corpse, and carefully rolled them up, stole the body, and all of this without waking the guards, all of whom were asleep. The Roman guards then told on themselves, "Hey, Wyatt, you make it a practice if your dad tells you to do something you didn't do, say, 'Hey, Dad, I want to tell him myself. I'd like to get in trouble.'" No.
No, it's not.
Oh, Neil answered that one for me. But these guys tell them themselves. And so that they were asleep on duty. And then they based their testimony on what happened to the body on the events that transpired by their testimony while they were asleep. No effort was made to interrogate the thieves or recover the body, nor was any punishment meted out. And this by those who had successfully had an innocent and popular man falsely tried and put to death and had taken special measures to ensure the security of the tomb. Then, top it all off, this bunch of cowardly thieves began to proclaim boldly at the expense of their lives that Jesus had risen from the dead. Now, you're on the jury and you're listening to testimony. Does this story make sense? Can you believe this story? But that's the story. To try to account for the empty tomb. The question still remains when you're all done, where's the body? All right, here's another effort to try to counteract the evidence that Joseph of Arimathea removed the body to another place. If Joseph of Arimathea removed the body, who would certainly have known about it, and how would it have affected their story? Who would have known about it? The guards, the Roman guards, right? And if they knew, somehow he persuaded them to open the tomb or let him open the tomb and got the body and put it somewhere else, would they have told the story they told? That jeopardized their very lives? That would have been the story they would have told. "Hey, the tomb's empty. Oh, wait. Let me tell you what happened." But they didn't tell that story. And if Joseph had placed it in another place, the Jewish authorities, you know, when they were trying Jesus, did they bring in witnesses? Sure they did. And they had civil power behind them. And so would they have then determined to find out where Joseph put it? Call him in, ask him, find out where he put the body? Let me ask you this. You know, look at Mark 15, 43. What kind of man was this Joseph that supposedly took the body out and moved it? In Mark chapter 15 and verse 43, what kind of disciple was he?
He says an honorable counselor.
He was honorable, but he says he was also... What did he have to do when he asked for the body? Had to gather up courage, didn't he? He was actually a secret disciple, wasn't he? In John 19 and 38, look at John 19 and 38. Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but a secret one, for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take the body away. So, Joseph of Arimathea was not some bold character. So he's going to go to the Roman soldiers, knowing all the Jewish hierarchy, want that body there Sunday morning, and say, hey, can I move the body? He's a scared guy. That sound like a fella that's described in the text? Furthermore, according to Luke 23:50, I think Sally just mentioned that. What kind of man was he, Sally?
He was an honorable man.
All right. In Luke 23:50, he was a member of the council, a good and righteous or honorable man. Okay, let's say he's a good and righteous and honorable man. So, less than 2 months later, this bunch of ragtag disciples start preaching, Jesus has risen, Jesus has risen from the grave. We've seen him. If Joseph is a good and honorable and upright man, what would he have done?
You're lying.
Yeah, you're lying. Come over here. I'll show you where it's at. I moved it. Would he went along with this pernicious error? Let people believe this? So again, there's just too many things about this story that doesn't seem to fit. All right, here's number three. Somebody said, well, you know, the women went to the tomb, said the body was gone. But you know what? There's a lot of tombs out there, and they probably went to the wrong tomb. So we've got some verses on your lesson. Look at Matthew 27. And look at verse 61. What does it say these women did? All right, they followed the body to being put in the grave, and they sat there. They said, that's the grave. They knew the tomb. And so it clearly says Mary Magdalene was there and the other Mary sitting opposite the grave. They didn't get the story from somebody else. They followed the body and watched where it was put. There's more. Look at Mark 15:47 in Mark's account. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, were looking on. You remember when we looked at John 20, two words for seeing. One is looking in the tomb and the other is really carefully beholding how the cloths were laid up neatly. This is that word for they look carefully. They look carefully, it says, to see where the body was laid. So it wasn't a casual thing. They wanted to know. Why'd they want to know? That's right. The Egyptians' process of embalming was different from Jews. The Egyptians would actually take out parts of the body and the brain and they'd fill it with all kinds of spices. They had it down to an art. Bodies would last for centuries. The Jews didn't do that. But they did use spices to help preserve the body. And what's wrong with these women? Why are they waiting until Sunday morning? Why didn't they do that Saturday evening when the body was, or Friday evening when the body was put in the tomb?
Sabbath day.
They were running out of time. In fact, when Joseph put him in that tomb, it says that he put him there because it was near. Now, I don't know if Joseph had plans to put him in somebody else's or another tomb that he owned or some other tomb, but they chose that one because it was near and the Sabbath was approaching. And so these women wanted to, John says it was the custom of the Jews to use these spices on a dead body. Nothing said about that in the case of Lazarus, but there's no reason to believe it wasn't done. That's their custom. It's mentioned on this particular case because the usual was not followed. That is, they didn't do it because of the time element. They didn't have time. And so they wanted to come back the next day to do what? Luke 23:54 and 24:1. Linda mentioned it. They wanted to come back the next day and finish the embalming procedures, putting these spices on the body. And so if they're going to come back and put spices on the body, they need to know where the which tomb it is, number one. And if they're coming back to finish an embalming process, you know, Nicodemus had already used a bunch of spices. He and Joseph of Arimathea were involved in the burial of Jesus. But if they wanted to come back and add some more spices, this is an embalming process. How many people have you known? Well, there are stories about this. How would you like to be put in a casket while you're still living? But, you know, this is the... Here these women are coming back to embalm the body. What does that tell you they believe about Jesus? He's dead. Do they expect him to be raised?
No.
You don't embalm him if you're expecting him to be raised. And they're just like the other disciples. They do not expect the resurrection. And so they wanted to come back and finish this. And they knew the place where the body was. Furthermore, when they went and told Peter and John, the body's gone on Sunday morning. If they went to the wrong tomb, what would Peter and John have done? They'd have went to the right tomb. Say, no, y'all are mistaken. But they went to the tomb. Were Peter and John missing it also? Did they get the wrong tomb? And so the other disciples as well, when the women came and told the other disciples, hey, Jesus is raised. Wait a minute. We're going to go check for ourselves. Because they didn't believe them. The fact is, Sunday morning the body was gone. The tomb was empty. The very tomb, Friday evening, the body was placed and sealed. Where's the body? That's the question. Where's the body? Well, here's this other effort. Called the swoon theory. Okay, let's look at this one. It presumes Jesus really didn't die on the cross. Now, let me ask you this from the very outset. Does that challenge your thinking? What had happened the night before he was hung on the cross?
Scourged.
Beat the flesh off his body. Did they take him and get him to the nearest ER for treatment?
No.
Slapped, hit with fist, beaten. Was he fed?
No.
This goes all night long. And then they take him the next day. How did they get the cross to where they're going to crucify him? He had to carry it part of the way at least. And then they take this guy that's been beaten all night long and they nail him to a cross. Nail his hands and his feet. put that thing up in the air. And how long was he there? 6 hours? Now, without anything else, is that guy going to survive? But wait, there's more. Remember those soldiers we called up a while ago? Now, the Jews didn't want that body to be there that evening. Why? Sabbath day, 6 o'clock. So they wanted the bodies off the cross. So these soldiers had a duty. What was their duty?
Break the legs up so they would die.
Be sure they were dead. Mm-hmm. So they come to the first guy. What'd they do? What'd they do to the third guy? Broke his leg. What about the middle guy? Got a spear and thrust it through. He said, he's dead. But they went ahead and thrust a spear through him. And what came out? Blood and water. I'm not a medical expert, but those that know medicine say that's an indication, certain indication of death. And so the idea that, you know, Jesus went through the crucifixion, but he really didn't die. That in itself challenges your thinking. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that people ridicule the Christian's faith. Oh, you just believe anything. But you've got to account for where's the body. Here are efforts that are made to account for it. Now, if you can believe those kind of stories that we're looking at, who really has a faith based on lack of evidence, emotional? It's not the Christian. It's the fellow who denies the resurrection. Well, I don't believe Jesus was raised. Okay. But on what basis? On what basis? What evidence do you have? And what do you do with the evidence that's presented? So here's this swoon theory. So we read in John 19:34, you have it there on your lesson, that when the soldier came, he pierced his side. We have, again, a kind of a summation of this particular effort. You got it on your lesson there, paragraph. After being beaten through the night, no sleep, scourged the next morning, made to carry his cross, nailed to the cross, hung there 6 hours, a spear thrust in his side, buried in a sealed tomb, no food or medical attention. Now, without any help or medical attention, he revives. Removes the grave clothes. That's not all. He folds them up neatly. Pushes away the large stone at the mouth of the tomb. Remember, the 4 to 6 women said, how are we going to move this stone? They're outside. He's inside. Imagine, now he's going to move that big round stone that was rolled against the tomb. Pushes away the stone. And then, I don't know how many soldiers there were, but in that condition, he overcomes the soldiers. Imagine that. And he overcomes the soldiers. And in this condition, weakened, battered, bleeding, he goes and persuades the disciples, I was dead, now I'm alive. Victory. Really? And encourages them to be willing to lay down their lives for him. You know about believing fairy tales. There's your good fairy tale. And so let's just suppose this happened. Let's suppose it happened. We read a story a while ago that overturns it. What was that first story? First one we talked about. Y'all can't read my mind? The soldier story. If this happened, would they have told the story they told? No, they wouldn't have told that story. And if somebody said, well, they couldn't tell that story since it's so incredible, nobody believe it. Well, why are you trying to use it to get around the empty tomb then? Yes, it is incredible. It's impossible. And if it had been a miracle, Jesus wouldn't have been beating and battered. In fact, it would have been victorious. So anyway, these are the efforts. Well, we've got one more. If Jesus was raised from the dead, why did the Jews search for Jesus to kill him again? Would they have done that kind of thing?
Yes.
How do you know? With Lazarus. He raised Lazarus. Boy, people are wanting to see Lazarus. They're believing. They say, you know what? We've got to get rid of that guy. And so if they believed he was raised, why not search for him to kill him again? They had been for months and months and months, maybe a couple of years, wanting to kill him. And now he's out walking around. Let's go get him. Stop this thing. But if they had set out a search party, set out word, maybe got a permission from Pilate and a Roman guard, we need to find Jesus. What does that admit?
He's alive.
He's alive. Uh-oh. Huh?
And they've already killed him once.
That's right. And that he's killed him once. And he's alive, which means it would be an admission of the resurrection from the dead. And based on the Jews' own testimony, when they wanted to put the guard, if he was raised from the dead, what are the consequences? It proves he wasn't a deceiver. They knew that. And so this would not have been a good procedure to say, oh, we got to go find Jesus. He's alive somewhere. And so none of this makes any sense. So, however one tries to deal with the empty tomb, the question remains. Where's the body? Yes, Keith?
So, the question did, I'm reading through these, the question did rise in my mind. You know, people are going to claim the swoon theory. Why couldn't they have just said, well, we're going to go kill him again because he wasn't dead to begin with. You
know? Do what now? We're going to do what?
We're just going to go kill him. We're going to go kill him because we didn't finish the job the first time. If the theory is the swoon theory, they could have gone and pursued him again and said, well, he just didn't die the first time. We're going to kill him a second time. In my mind, I've been trying to reconcile something, and to me, this fits perfectly here. Reconciling Matthew 27:52-54. This is where those other people were raised and went into the Holy City. You got to have the people on your side. They had to have the people on their side when they crucified Christ. So you could claim that, oh, Jesus just didn't die, and now we're going to go kill him again. But they needed the mob. They needed the mob to encourage this. They want to grab us, take him down, not Jesus. But I don't know why it's recorded in verse 52 that the tombs were open and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the Holy Spirit city and appeared to many. But to me, you lose your crowd. You lose your audience. Because now you see that there are these resurrected bodies, maybe of family members or people in the past that you knew. Anyway, they're entering the Holy City and they're being seen. You've lost your audience. I mean, they're not bloodthirsty anymore. They've just seen a miraculous event, and it makes Jesus' resurrection that much more believable, because even though they didn't see Jesus, you know, we know many did, but even if they didn't see Jesus, you know that it's possible between Lazarus and this stuff. For me, just trying to recognize.
In other words, they wouldn't have the support if they went out to search for him like they had to crucify him.
Yes, sir.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
That's my best explanation, unless you have another one. I just was trying to reconcile this, but to me it adds an underlying motive if you were hearing.
Well, I think it all stops with the fact they didn't believe he was raised.
Yep.
Simple. They didn't go search for him. They didn't think he was raised. They can't give an explanation, but they didn't believe he was raised. But if they had believed he was raised, Keith makes a good point. He said, why didn't they go search for it? But to get him crucified, they had to have support. And now you got all these people raised from the dead going to the city. Now, why were all these people raised from the dead?
We don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
It was in prophecy, and so it happened.
What, all the people raised from the dead?
The tomb to be opened when he was crucified. He said the tomb to be opened.
What prophecy are you talking about? That when Jesus was raised, all the tombs would be open?
No, when Christ died on the cross.
What? You know where in Isaiah you're talking about? Okay. Well, there's some Isaiah prophecies about resurrection that has to do with the resurrection of the nation. I don't know which ones you're talking about. But anyway, Isaiah 53 deals with the actual physical resurrection of Christ. But I'd be interested in what you have in mind.
Okay.
That's a good point. Yeah, if he was beaten and bruised and all of that, of course, should have noticed that. But anyway, all right. So we're left with that. Now, in our next class, so was Jesus raised from the dead? We start with the empty tomb. And I'll tell you, I'll stay with it until somebody shows me what's wrong with that. That just looks like to me that's objective evidence. But then we're going to call in the eyewitnesses. And the Lord willing, in our next session together, we're going to start listening to the eyewitnesses who said they saw him after he was raised. Okay? Any questions or comments, other comments about the study that we did today? Yes, sir.
I have a point. This, you know, we keep talking about being in a jury. If this were today's trial, going back to the soldiers, obviously the soldiers were bribed. Any attorney worth his salt started asking all these questions. He was asking if he looked at the motive, the lie.
Good point.
We have forensic evidence. Now you go in, financial forensic evidence, you go in and check your bank account. Don't know if you could do that then. But if that were today, you can prove they were bribed. Likely.
But bribery don't happen today. Why did Benedict Arnold betray the United States? Bribery? Sure, bribery happens. It's in our politics right now. Sure. But Wally has a good point today. If it wasn't true, a lawyer would say, let's check your financial records. But of course, I don't know if those soldiers put the money in the bank. They may put it in their pockets. But that's an interesting point. Okay, there's so much about this story that tried to get around the empty tomb and the resurrection just doesn't make sense. All right, thank you for your attention. And